Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, bringing you another episode of Dragnet. I got to begin with a couple big thank yous. First of all, to those of you who've gone and subscribed to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, thank you so much. You have made this such a successful first week for the program, first full week on the air. As I'm recording this show on Thursday night, the first two episodes already have 500 unique downloads, and the third and fourth episodes, which are already posted, they're on their way to 500. These things, of course, because you're dealing with podcasts, those take a few days for them to circulate through the whole system, but. Thank you so much. Very successful week. I think back to my very first week doing Dragnet. I had a total, here's my grand total download, 1. Now, you might compare it to my third week just because I did, I did one preview episode on the 12th, so this was technically the third week that the show had been out, even though there'd only been one episode before. My total for third week was 2. So thank you, everybody, so much. Everybody who's gone over and download, much appreciated. I've got a very special thank you, though, to Todd Cochran over at the Blueberry Network. That's blueberrywithnoes.com. As everybody knows, we have not had a sponsor so far this month. The reason was that we were not picked up for the latest buy of the Go to My PC campaign. Well, Todd said he would see about, if demographics matched up, if all things were possible, he'd see about getting us back in next quarter. Well, he did even better than that, as he got us on for the rest of this quarter. We now again have a sponsor for the show. And that's phenomenal. This whole thing with us not being sponsored, was totally, not at all Blueberry's fault. It was my fault. We're supposed to fill out an advertising survey. And I thought, well, who needs to fill out this survey? I've had this, sponsorship, except for, a couple spots where there were some computer delays. So why bother to fill out the survey? And he told me my demographics didn't match up. And that would be because my demographics were never filled out because I didn't enter the survey. But Todd has come through. And thanks so much to Blueberry Network. We're glad to Go to My PC sponsoring us for the rest of the quarter. And we look forward to a continued relationship with this wonderful sponsor. And by the way, speaking of Blueberry, if you're a podcaster, and I know we have some people who do their own podcast listening, check out Blueberry's free stats. They're phenomenal. I've really enjoyed them as we've done the new show. Because before I've relied on TalkShoe stats, this is the first time I've actually been able to just sit down and, have a stat service, in detail, be able to track every single download, done. And they do great details, even on their free service. They've got a premium service. I don't know if I personally need those details, but, if you're going to use a stat, tracking service, I strongly recommend Blueberry. Great free service over there. All right. Well, let's go ahead and we've got a little more to get into. I noticed something, I told everybody it's pretty easy, in general, to go to Podcast Alley, vote for the program, encourage everybody to do that every week except those few ones where I forget. On Dragnet, you just drag it in the search box and we're the second result to come up. However, on the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, it's not that quite that easy. In fact, it's not easy at all. You rate Detectives of Old Time Radio, and our show is not anywhere on there. And so I was trying to figure out how I was going to be able to solve this so people could just easily go and cast their vote. Well, we've got reader subdomains, which we can use for redirects. So I went ahead and I created a redirect. So basically, if you put podcastalley.greatdetectives.net, that will take you to the Podcast Alley page of greatdetectives.net to vote for them. We've also done that with the Dragnet show. So you just so we've made it even easier to vote for us on Podcast Alley. Just put podcastalley.radiodragnet.com. You can skip the whole search thing, and you'll just be able to vote for us there. So podcastalley.radiodragnet.com. And if you listen to The Great Detectives and you enjoy it, go to podcastalley.greatdetectives.net. We've got a little, perhaps overboard with some of our redirects, but they're all there with the purpose of helping you, be able to connect with us. And that's one thing that's unique. When I look at the shows, the one thing that's different about ours is, the level of reader feedback. I haven't heard that on other shows, so we definitely want to encourage that. You can go and, enter your survey for us, and that's important because I mentioned that the information I need to give to Blueberry about our audience, I enter that based on the survey information you provide, and we've got the short survey, so it doesn't take long. Go to survey.radiodragnet.com. At that link also, if you listen to Great Detectives, you can just hit the back button and enter our survey for the Great Detectives. So encourage that, just so we know who's listening. And you can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.radiodragnet.com. I love domain redirects. We actually had some very interesting discussion on the Facebook page. We were talking about the big family, and Sean Bernard writes that he didn't find the "he seems happy" line that odd, but I did miss the explanation about the fact that the gun had recently fired two shots. Because if you'll recall from that episode 2 weeks ago, they had found a gun in an abandoned car with two shots fired, and there was in an attempt to set up this fake suicide. And basically what I think happened there was that the guy who was trying to fake the suicide, he fired the two shots, and then he didn't think about, well, okay, I'm firing the two shots. How's that going to look to the police? Because they're going to come and find, okay, so the body walked away. And it was kind of confusing. I do agree with Sean on that. Because it looks like a murder. And in a traditional murder, there would have been a twist ending where we would have found out that there had been somebody who was actually killed in this touching suicide cover-up. But this is realism. But that was kind of a drop plot point. Can't blame that too much on Jack Webb. We blame the writers. They're the ones who wrote it. Celeste asked for she said that, "Thanks for producing the Dragnet podcast. I've listened to every episode to date and really enjoy it. I was looking online for a list of all the Dragnet radio episode, but I can't find one. Do you know where I could find info? Thanks again, Celeste." There are a lot of different sites. Old Time Radio Researchers has it. OTRsite.com is probably my favorite because they've got a list based on the number on which department they were, he was working out of each episode. And that can be a good way to tell when somebody is saying, this episode is, you know, this episode is the, you know, is the first episode of Dragnet we're selling you. And you can tell that that's not the case. I'm able to tell anyway, because it's a robber, it's a homicide case, but the first episode was a robbery case. So, completely different. That's otrsite.com/logs/logd/1005.htm. otrsite.com/logs/logd/1005.htm. And you can come over to Facebook and find out more there at facebook.radiodragnet.com. Well, we're going to go ahead and get into the show in a minute. I'm going to come back with a little more. I don't want to hold up the start of the show too much, because we've just got a lot of comments, emails, questions, and we're going to get to a little more right after the show. But I want to let you know first about our sponsor. Most of us now use a BlackBerry, iPhone, or Palm to check email when we're out of the office. But it's not enough. You need to access the files and programs on your Office PC. That's why I recommend GoToMyPC for complete access to everything on your computer from anywhere. With GoToMyPC, you're actually operating your Office computer from any other computer. Access your programs, files, everything you need to work from anywhere. All you need is an internet connection. Our listeners can try GoToMyPC free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited remote access free. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a free trial. And if you do like it, I will encourage you to set up an annual plan. They offer significant savings for you. For a really affordable solution for your remote access needs. Let's go ahead and get into today's episode. This is another episode with Martin Milner as Bill Lockwood, and we will come back.
The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. You get a call from the receiving hospital in your city. A dead body has been left in the hospital elevator. There's no lead to the identity of the corpse. There's no apparent cause of death. Your job, investigate.
Documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, November 9th. It was foggy in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Bill Lockwood. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. It was 11:28 p.m. when we got to the third floor at Georgia Street Receiving Hospital, Dr. Terrell's office.
Friday, glad to see you. I've been waiting for you.
We made it as soon as we could, Doctor. I'd like to have you meet my new partner, Bill Lockwood. Dr. Terrell, Bill.
How are you? I think I've seen you around, Lockwood.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I understand you got a problem, Doc. What's the story?
Odd one. It happened a few minutes after 11. You want to sit down a minute? I'll fill you in before we go back and take a look at the body. Yeah,
thank you very much.
I understand it's a woman. Is that right?
Yeah. Grace Morgan. She's the night nurse on duty. She told me she was sitting at the desk checking over some patients' cards. It was about 5-10 minutes after 11 when she heard the elevator come up.
Mm-hmm.
She heard the elevator stop and the doors open. Kept on checking the cards there, didn't pay any attention to it, and then she realized nobody got out of the elevator. She looked up, and the elevator doors were still open. She saw this young woman slumped over in a wheelchair sitting there in the elevator.
The woman was alone, was she?
That's right. The nurse went over and wheeled her out of the elevator. The woman was wearing a nightgown, bathrobe over that. She was unconscious. The nurse called me. The two of us took the woman into a treatment room. I examined her. She was dead.
Any indication how long?
Body was still warm. She'd only been dead a short time.
Any idea of the cause of death?
I noticed a couple of abrasions on her right shoulder. Another one in the right temporal region. Not positive, but I don't think any of them were severe enough to cause death.
No other markings at all?
No, she seemed to have been in good physical condition. Noticed a strong smell of alcohol, though. Could be she'd been drinking.
Is the nurse pretty sure the woman came up the elevator alone? Possibility one of the attendants might have brought her up?
No, I checked with the attendant on duty down the first floor lobby, Ray Collins. He didn't bring her up. He said a man came in the lobby about 11 o'clock. Said he had a sick woman out in his car. He asked for a wheelchair to bring her in. Ray asked if he could help, but the man said he'd take care of it. That's all Ray knows about it. He let the man have a wheelchair, then he went in the back room to change some linens on the ambulance stretcher.
Mm-hmm. Any possibility one of the other attendants might have brought her up in the elevator?
No, Collins was the only attendant on duty.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk to him. Is he still around?
Yeah, I knew you'd want to see him. He was off duty 11:30. I held him over. He's down at the corner having a sandwich. He'll be back in a few minutes.
What do you figure, Doctor? Think the woman could have operated the elevator herself?
Possible. Not too probable, though. It's a self-operating elevator, automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Someone could have wheeled the woman into the elevator, pushed the button for the third floor, and then stepped back. Would have taken her straight up.
Yeah. The nurse is sure the elevator didn't go back down after it got up here, huh?
Positive. She heard the elevator doors open. They stayed that way. She kept waiting for someone to come out, and that's what attracted her attention.
Say, how about identification? The woman have a purse with her or anything like that, Doc?
No, all she had was what she was wearing, nightgown, slippers, and bathrobe. Let's go back and have a look. I'll show you.
Okay, thank you.
You say the only markings on the body are those abrasions on the shoulder and the forehead.
Yeah, that's right.
And you don't think that's why she's dead? You any ideas at all?
I wouldn't want to say, Lockwood. Strange one. Gonna have to wait for the autopsy.
Well, how about the wheelchair the woman came up in, Doc? Where's it now?
Back here in the same room with the body. I gave notice it wasn't to be touched. I knew you'd want to check.
Oh, fine.
In here.
All right, to smoke in here?
Yeah, sure.
Fine. Want a cigarette?
No, thanks.
Bill?
No.
Over here on the table. Nurse put the woman's clothing over there. Nightgown, slippers, bathroom.
I see.
Seems to be a fairly young woman.
I'd say in her early 30s. Nice-looking girl. Well-groomed. Knows her hair, fingernails, well-kept.
A bruise there on her head. Took a pretty good blow to cause that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Might even be worse than it looks. Hard to say right now. Other abrasions I was telling you about, right here along the clavicle, seem to be fairly distinct. Three or four of them.
That's all of them, huh?
That's it. Like I say, we'll know more after they post the body.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the clothing over here.
Mm-hmm. Want to check over the bathrobe, Bill?
Yeah.
There's no label here. Size marking, though. Size 34. Just an ordinary rayon nightgown. Seems to be fairly new. It's not damaged.
Nothing on the bathrobe, Joe. Both pockets empty. No visible markings. Manufacturer's label here. Fairly common trade name.
Mm-hmm. Laundry marks?
No, none showing. We can have the crime lab check them over. How about the slippers?
No, it's the same. Nothing.
You fellas want me to notify the coroner?
No, we'll get it, Doc. We have to call in for the crime lab crew anyway.
It looks like a rough one. We don't even know what we've got.
I can't figure it. If somebody murdered the woman, why'd they bring her here to die?
Yeah.
If she was sick or hurt and they were worried enough about it to bring her here, why'd they want to get rid of her? Leave her alone in an elevator?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. Somebody's got something to hide.
Sure could use a lead. Man puts her on the elevator and sends her up three floors. Don't know who she is, how she died. Don't even know where she came from.
Well, there's no choice. We'll just start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Ground floor. 11:52 p.m. The receiving hospital attendant Ray Collins returned, and we interviewed him in Dr. Terrell's office. He told us substantially the same thing the doctor had told us. At a few minutes past 11 o'clock that night, a man entered the lobby of the hospital and asked for a wheelchair to move a patient up to the third floor. Collins stated he gave the man the wheelchair. The man refused his offer of assistance, and Collins went on about his work. He didn't see the patient, he didn't see any car parked outside, and he was able to give us only a partial description of the man himself. A male Caucasian, about 35 years old, short, heavy build, dark hair. The crew from the crime lab arrived and began their investigation. The body was photographed and fingerprinted, and the wheelchair was also dusted for prints. The clothing was packed up to be taken downtown for further examination. After the men from the crime lab left, Bill Lockwood began a canvass of the immediate neighborhood for possible witnesses. Meantime, I checked with the rest of the hospital personnel and the patients. They could tell me nothing. 12:30 a.m., I met Bill back at Dr. Terrell's office.
How'd you do, Joe? Any luck?
After the nurses and some of the other attendants, they couldn't help any. Checked with the dispatcher on incoming and outgoing ambulances. Nothing there. What about you?
No good. Most of the business places around here are locked up. Talked to the newsboy down at the corner. He was about the only one on the street. He didn't see anything.
Sure going slow, isn't it? Might give Bergman a call, see if he's got the woman's prints classified.
How about the coroner? Show up yet?
Yeah, I think he's in there now. Yes, ma'am. Give me station 2557. Yeah, that's right. Late in print. Hi, let me talk to Bergman, please. Right. Yeah, Dean, Joe Friday. No, we're still over at the hospital. You do any good on those prints? Yeah, that's what we figured. How about her print? Okay, Dean, thanks. Yeah, right. Well, we're still batting 1,000.
What do you say? They make her prints?
Nothing in records on her. Dean's going to send along a set to Washington, see if they got anything.
How about the wheelchair? Any prints there?
Well, the nurses and Doc Carroll's, that's all. We figured on that, didn't we?
Lousy luck.
Sure is. I checked with missing persons while you were out. There's nothing there either.
Well, that about finishes up here, huh?
Yeah, we better get back to the office.
Joe?
Yeah, Doc?
I think I got something for you here.
Yeah?
Nurse at the switchboard got a call a minute ago. Man's voice wanted to know the condition of Carla Cheswick. Nurse checked the list of patients, didn't find anyone by that name. The man insisted she's here. The nurse asked him what time the woman was admitted to the hospital. He told her 11 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
The man said, I know she's there. I brought her myself.
Along with Dr. Carroll, Bill Lockwood and I went down the hall and talked to the nurse who'd received the phone call. She told us that she tried to question the caller as to his name and his relationship to the alleged patient, Carla Cheswick, but the man refused and hung up. We put in a call to R&I and asked him to run the name for us. There was no one by that name in the files. We went back to the doctor's office and started checking through the telephone directories. In the northwestern section, we found a listing for a Mrs. Carla Z. Cheswick on North Capitol Avenue. We called the number, but there was no answer. Then we checked with the office, told them what we had, and that we were going to follow through on it. 1:18 a.m. It was only a possibility, but it had to be checked out. Bill Lockwood and I left Georgia Street Receiving Hospital, got in the car, and drove out to the address on North Capitol Avenue. It was a large apartment house, fairly new. The name on the mailbox for apartment 18 was Mrs. Carla Cheswick. We rang, but there was no answer. We finally had to get the manager out of bed, a Mrs. Herbert. We identified ourselves and explained the reason for our visit. She got a pass key, showed us upstairs to the second floor, and let us in apartment 18. There was no one there, but there was evidence of a recent party within a matter of hours. Half-filled cocktail glasses, an empty whiskey bottle, a glass bowl containing partially melted ice cubes. An end table in the corner had been overturned. In the bedroom, women's clothing was scattered on the floor and on the dressing table. On the mantel in the living room, there was a picture of a woman.
Did you notice anything unusual about her at that time, Miss Herbert? I mean, anything out of the ordinary?
No, I don't think so. She'd been drinking some. I'm pretty sure of that. That's not unusual for Mrs. Cheswick. She drinks quite a bit. Parties and things. Runs around a lot.
Yes, ma'am. You didn't notice anything about her face? No cuts, bruises, anything?
No, nothing like that. Why?
You told us she had quite a few men friends. Do you know any of their names, where they live?
No, can't say to do. She was just one of the tenants. I didn't try to get acquainted. Didn't have much in common with her. The other tenants didn't either, matter of fact. She kept pretty much to herself, her and her friends.
I see. Now, about this party she had last night, Miss Herbert. You say you don't know who was there with her?
No, I'm afraid I don't. When I called her on the phone to ask her to quiet things down, I heard that one man's voice talking. That's about all, though. I couldn't tell you who was there.
Well, is there anyone at all that you know of that was close to her? I mean, someone we could talk to about her.
Well, her husband, I suppose. He's the only one close to her I know. He comes around every month and takes care of the rent. Kind of a peculiar thing, but I never questioned it. I figured it's their business, live and let live.
You have any idea where we can find the husband?
No, I'm not sure. He works at a machine shop out near Glendale. I have his home address in my rent book downstairs if you want it.
Yes, ma'am. We'd like to have that if we could. Would you happen to know how Mrs. Cheswick and her husband got along? I mean, the separation of theirs. Was it friendly or did they still quarrel quite a bit?
No, as far as I know, they got along all right. As long as they didn't have to live together. Poor Mr. Cheswick, I feel sorry for him. He's going to take it hard. His wife, I don't know whether to blame or pity her. She was a terrible disappointment to him.
That's so?
I had a long talk with him once. Seemed like such a nice man, hard worker. And his wife, he was so disgusted. I mean, drinking all the time, going out with different men. Bitter disappointment. He told me how he felt.
Well, did he seem violent on the subject? I mean, did he feel anger toward his wife?
No, just pity. He said he'd rather have her dead than go on the way she was.
We checked through the dead woman's apartment for names and addresses of some of her men friends, but we found nothing. The crew from the crime lab went over the apartment thoroughly. The only evidence found were fingerprints on some of the cocktail glasses. Along with the apartment manager, Mrs. Herbert, we went downstairs and she gave us Mr. Cheswick's home address and also his place of employment. 2:30 a.m., we got to a phone and called Cheswick's home, but the people he was staying with told us that he wasn't there. He was working the all-night shift at a farm implement factory on Glendale Boulevard. 3:05 a.m., Bill and I drove out to the factory and checked with the night personnel superintendent. He directed us to the factory repair shop where Cheswick was employed as a welder. The foreman at the repair shop pointed him out for us. Cheswick was working on the welding line, a tall, thin man, slight build. Bill Lockwood and I went back and introduced ourselves.
Yes, sir, Ernie Cheswick, that's my name. What can I do for you?
I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes if we could. It's about your wife.
Carla, what's the matter? Is she in trouble again?
Well, it might be better if we could step outside and talk. It won't take very long.
All right, I got to finish up this little job here, if you don't mind waiting. A couple of pieces of tubing. It won't take a minute.
Sure, you go right ahead.
You might stand back a couple of steps. This thing pops a little.
Okay, thanks.
Ah, too much oxygen. Have to light it again. Yeah, that does it.
Don't look at the flames, Joe. Bad for your eyes.
Yeah, I know.
They sure earn their money, don't they?
Yeah, they seem to. A lot of work.
Finish in a second here. Okay, that's got it. Now, what's this about my wife, Sergeant? What's the matter?
We understand you're separated from her, Mr. Cheswick.
Yeah, that's right. About a year ago now. I finally gave it up as a bad job. Wasn't anything I could do for her. Nothing anybody could do for her. Hopeless.
Well, when's the last time you saw her?
First of the month. Went by to pay her rent. Dropped in to say hello, that's all. I stay away as much as I can. No good bum, that's about all you can say about her. Seemed to admit I was even married to her. What do you ask, anyway?
Your wife's dead, Mr. Cheswick.
Huh?
Yes, but she died late last night. Found her at Georgia Street Receiving Hospital.
Oh. Guess I've been expecting something like that. I can't feel sorry. Probably the best thing for her. How'd it happen?
Well, we're not sure. I wonder if we could step outside. Sure be a lot easier to talk, wouldn't it?
Yeah, all right.
Fine.
Over here, we can duck out the back way.
Okay.
You say they found her at Georgia Street, huh? What was it? She in an accident?
Oh, so it doesn't look like that. We're going to have to wait for the coroner's report. What time do you check in at night for work, Mr. Cheswick?
You're supposed to be on the job by 10 o'clock. I punch in before that tonight. Why?
A routine question. I suppose the men around the plant will vouch for you. You check in at 10 and you've been here ever since?
Yeah, that's right. You can ask any of them. What's the pitch? You think I had something to do with it? Carla getting killed?
Well, we didn't say that, Cheswick. Your wife's dead and we have to check on all the leads, all the possible suspects.
Well, I don't know how it happened, but I didn't have any. I lived 9 years with her. Lousiest 9 years of my life. Booze, parties, going out all the time. She wasn't a wife. She didn't know what the word meant.
I understand she's been running around with different men lately. Do you happen to know any of them?
No, I don't know. I couldn't care less. Stupid dame, Sergeant. That's the easiest way you can let her off. I tried to make a go of it. Wasn't any good. I worked for her, tried to give her everything she wanted. Didn't make any difference.
Yeah?
She's a bum. Some of them must be born that way. A bum dame. I could have killed her. I had reason enough to. I didn't.
How about your wife's drinking habits? Did she do most of it at home, or did she go out to bars?
Always at the bar. Only one place she ever went to. A place on 8th and Rosewood, right on the corner. Went there all the time, 6-7 nights a week. She'd hang over the bar all night. I'd like to put up with that for 9 years, huh? Drinking, going off somewhere on weekend.
Well, how come it lasted that long, Cheswick?
I don't know. I guess I should have had my head examined. Just a bum. I figured I could change her. Kept trying. Never worked out. After the drinking, she'd have these terrific headaches. It'd make her sick. I'd stay home from work and take care of her, wait on her hand and foot. She always made promises, nothing but a liar. As soon as she got well, she'd start it all over again, same thing.
Yeah.
Just a bum, a tramp. No good at all, no good. Just a tramp, no good tramp.
Cheswick? Mr. Cheswick, is there anything we can do?
Carla. He's dead. Carla.
When the dead woman's husband, Ernest Cheswick, recovered, we continued questioning him, but we got nowhere. Before we left the plant, we checked his time card, talked to the machine shop foreman and some of the men Cheswick worked with. We got the same story all along the line. Cheswick had showed up for work at 9:46 p.m. the night before and had not left the plant since that time. 4:35 a.m. Bill and I got in the car, drove back to the office, and typed up a 15.7 report for Captain Lorman. 8:30 a.m. Over in the county morgue, the body of Mrs. Cheswick was being posted. A few minutes past 10 a.m., Bill Lockwood and I drove out to a bar on the corner of 8th and Rosewood, the same bar where Ernest Cheswick told us his wife did most of her drinking. It was a typical neighborhood cocktail lounge in the early morning. Two customers sipping beer at the far end of the bar. The manager busy washing glasses and bringing in supplies. We called him over and identified ourselves.
Popular girl. Married old Ernie Cheswick. They're separated now.
Yeah, well, do you know if she was in here last night?
That's right, she was. Hardly Mrs. Knight. Why?
Would you happen to know about what time she left last night?
8:30, about that. Might ask that fellow there downtown the bar. He'd know better than me.
Well, how's that?
He left with her.
November 10th, Thursday, 10:14 a.m. The manager of the cocktail lounge pointed out the man at the end of the bar who was supposed to have left the place shortly after 8 o'clock the night before with the dead woman, Carla Cheswick. Bill Lockwood and I went up to the man, identified ourselves, and questioned him briefly. He appeared tense and highly nervous. He told us his name was John Gables, an assistant sales manager for a downtown jewelry concern. He didn't deny that he was in the bar the night before, but he refused to admit that he left with Mrs. Cheswick. He insisted he didn't even know her. We asked him to account for how he spent his time the night before, but he refused. We got in the car and drove downtown to the city hall. While Bill took the suspect to the interrogation room, I stopped by the R&I counter and had to make a run on Gables. He had no previous criminal record. I called the morgue, but there was no report on the autopsy yet. 10:52 a.m. I signed in at the office, briefed Captain Lorman on the developments, and then I headed down the hall for the interrogation room.
We had a couple of drinks together, and that's all there was to it. You can ask anybody who was there. She got up and left by herself. I didn't go with her.
And Joe?
Yeah.
Gables here was just telling me he did see Mrs. Cheswick in the bar last night. Had a couple of drinks with her.
Why'd you hold out, Gable? Why couldn't you tell us that when we asked you?
I didn't remember then. You came up to me in the bar, started asking questions. I got all rattled.
Uh-huh.
Didn't make any difference, though. I didn't even know her name. She had those couple of drinks with her, and then she got up and left. That's all. I didn't go out with her. And
the bartender says you did. He's sure of it. Says he can get half a dozen other people to back him up.
He's wrong. He's got to be. He's thinking of somebody else.
Well, if you didn't leave the bar with Mrs. Cheswick, when did you leave?
I don't know. About 5 or 10 minutes later, I guess.
Where'd you go then?
I walked around a little bit, got a little fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a show.
Which one?
I don't remember the name of the place. It's on Rosewood, a couple of blocks down from the bar.
What picture did you see?
I'm not sure. I had a couple of drinks.
You went to the movies, you don't even know what you saw.
Well, I told you I had a couple of drinks. I was feeling pretty good. I just don't remember, that's all.
Not much of an alibi, Gables.
What are you talking about? I don't need an alibi.
The woman's dead, mister. You were with her the last time she was seen alive.
I wasn't with her. I don't care what anybody tells you. I wasn't with her.
This movie you say you went to. What time did you get out?
After midnight, I think. I don't remember.
Where'd you go after that?
Bar, had a few more drinks, and then went back to my hotel.
Which bar was that?
Place on West 7th. I go there sometimes. I know the bartender.
What time did you leave there?
Closing time, 2 o'clock, and then I went back to my hotel.
Uh-huh. You say you know the bartender there. I guess he'd be glad to vouch for you. I mean, that you were there when you said you were.
I don't know. Maybe not. He was pretty busy last night. Maybe he didn't notice me.
How about your hotel?
Huh?
The desk clerk. Somebody like that. They should be able to tell what time you got in, don't you think?
Well, they wouldn't know. I always carry my key with me. I go in the side door. They wouldn't know what time I got in.
What are you trying to sell, mister?
What are you talking about?
You knocked around town from 8 o'clock last night till past 2 o'clock this morning. You can't think of anyone that could vouch for you where you were, what time you got there, what time you left?
I can't think of anybody right now. I don't take down names and addresses every time somebody looks at me. What's the difference anyway? I didn't have anything to do with a girl.
This difference, Gable. The attendant at the hospital, he got a good look at the man who came in and asked for that wheelchair. He gave us the man's description. It fits you pretty close.
So what? It doesn't mean anything. He could make a mistake, too, just like that bartender.
They're all wrong but you. Is that what you're trying to say?
Look, as far as I'm concerned, I only got one thing to say. I had a couple of drinks with Carla last night, and that's all. She left by herself. I didn't even go near the apartment.
How'd you know she had an apartment?
Well, you told me. You said so.
No, we didn't say anything like that.
And I guess I heard it around the bar. Maybe she mentioned to me. Yeah, that's probably it.
Why don't you come off it, Gables?
Come off what? I don't even know what you're getting at.
We want a straight story, and we're not getting it. You told us you didn't even know the Cheswick woman before last night. You didn't even know her name.
That's right.
Then why'd you say Carla just a minute ago? You said I had a couple of drinks with Carla.
I say that?
That's what you said.
Maybe I just hadn't remembered. I was drinking quite a bit, talking to her. Maybe I just remembered.
Won't do, Gables. Story doesn't hold water. How about it?
I don't know. I was drinking quite a bit. A lot of things I don't remember.
How about giving it to us straight? What do you remember?
I thought about it. Thought about it all night. The more I went over it, the worse it got. I just couldn't remember. I knew what it would sound like in court. I couldn't tell it that way.
You couldn't tell what?
I didn't kill her. I didn't even touch her. You got to believe that.
Yeah.
I left the bar with her about 8:15, 8:30. She invited me up to her apartment. She was pretty well gone. Had quite a few drinks.
Mm-hmm.
We got there, had some more to drink, and then Carla got up and started for the kitchen to get some more ice. She tripped, I think, stumbled a little bit, and then she fell down. I think that's the way it was.
All right, go on.
She tried to get up, and then she fell again. Wasn't a bad fall, though. I figured she just passed out. Got some cold towels, ice water. I tried to bring her around. It wasn't any good. She was white as a sheet. I got scared. I didn't know what happened.
What'd you do then?
I don't remember. I just kept trying to bring her around. I don't remember any of it very well. I don't even know why she fell down.
You think you could have hit her, Gables? You think maybe that's why she fell down?
No. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I was mad at her for anything. I think we were having a pretty good time. I just don't remember, that's all. I'm not sure about any of it. Lousy booze, no good at all.
Did you kill her, Gable?
No, Sergeant, I swear it. As far as I can remember, I didn't. We were having a good time, that's all I know. I know I wasn't mad. I'm not a nasty drunk, not as far as I can remember anyway.
What'd you do when you couldn't revive Mrs. Cheswick? You brought her to the hospital?
Yeah, the shape I was in, I couldn't figure anything else to do. I got her in the car, drove her down to Georgia Street. I put her in the elevator, pressed the button, and sent her up. I'm a married man, you know. I didn't want any scandal and didn't want to get involved.
You didn't kill her, is that what you want us to believe?
I don't know what to tell you. I don't remember. If I killed her, I think I'd know it. I'm sure I would. I just don't remember.
I'll get it. Interrogation room, Friday talking. Yeah, Arthur. That's so. Just a second. All right, I got a pencil. I'll go ahead. Are you sure? How was that? I see. No possibility, huh? Yeah, I see. Okay, Arthur, thanks a lot. Yeah, sure, we'll pick it up later. Bye. Bye.
Yeah, Jim?
Coroner's report. Just finished the autopsy. It's all right, Gable.
Huh?
It's all right. It's all cleared up.
What do you mean?
Well, you're free to go if you like. We're not going to hold you.
What's the pitch, Joe?
Coroner's report. Primary cause of death was a massive cerebral hemorrhage. Hemorrhage into the ventricle.
Could have been a blow on the head, couldn't it? You figure that could have done it?
No. Secondary cause was a brain tumor, a big one. Coroner says she's had it for years. Must have caused her a lot of pain. Probably would have accounted for the drinking.
Hmm. And the tumor wrote on the hemorrhage. That's what's killed her.
That's it. Coroner says, erosion of the blood vessel by brain tumor. Probably grew, caused pressure on a blood vessel, finally gave way, caused the hemorrhage, and it killed her.
And she just died. That didn't have anything to do with it. She died and I didn't kill her.
Yes, sir, that's right. You're free to go if you want.
Thank God. You know, officers, I'll tell you the truth. I didn't know the answer. I didn't know if I killed her or not. I really didn't. Drinking so much, I came to, and there she was, dead. I didn't know what happened. I really didn't. I didn't know the answer.
Now, you're one up on us, Gable.
Huh?
We thought we did.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On Thursday, November 10th, the meeting was held in the office of Captain of Homicide. In a moment, the results of that meeting. With the filing of the official autopsy report by the county coroner, John Gables was cleared of all charges. He was released from custody immediately. The death of Mrs. Carla Cheswick was listed as due to natural causes by the coroner's jury.
Ladies and gentlemen, last year's traffic death toll was 37,500, a 7% increase over 1950. The National Safety Council believes that the best way to promote safety on the road is for each of us to know and obey traffic laws, to read and heed traffic signs. So be careful. The life you save may be your own.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Frazier. Heard tonight were Martin Milner, Vic Perrin, and Gwen Delano. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Now it's Counter Spy on NBC.
And welcome back. Friday, once again, on a Friday, to have a situation where the police aren't exactly right in their calculations. I like these episodes because it takes away a degree of predictability. And any show when you're dealing with police, you know, and private investigators, you can get into a rut. And so I like that they vary that. I thought that scene with the husband at his work, dealing with it, working through the emotion, it was a very powerful scene. extremely well written, and I thought it just captured even the realism of the moment, the real mixed feelings that this guy had, where, yes, you know, she was a bomb, etc., but he still loved her. It was just incredible. So, powerful scene there. Very powerful. So, all right, some of the comments we got on Podcast Alley. I really enjoy this podcast. Enjoyment for late night relaxing. Thank you for making my working days in the Keys a little less tedious. A good, clean, entertaining program with a host that explores the normal side of commentary. No extra frills, no long words, just explanation and helpful background. Thank you, Gareth. Love the podcast. Thanks for doing this, Adam. I really like it when you add tidbits about episodes or actors. Keep up the great work, John. Adam, keep up the work, the good work, as always. I love your show. I'm really enjoying the positive influence that your sound engineer is having, as well as the new theme music. Thank you very much for the comments. Got another one. Email came to us from a long-time listener, Jason writes, just wanted to say that I liked the new intro. The music sounds a bit like the intro for The Simpsons. I didn't know the sponsors paid you enough to hire Danny Elfman to edit the show. Kind of like The Simpsons, but not enough so that it would be, I think, problematic. I think that Mr. Elfman would appreciate it, and I'm sure Andy appreciates the positive feedback, and thanks for that. He also asked, one question I'm going to actually save for the Great Detective Show. He also asked, before I wrapped up, I just wanted to ask where you find the time to do all your podcasts. From what I've seen, I think you're up to four. Keep up the good work, and thanks. In answer to the question, I'm technically up to four, but I've really scaled back on the political podcasting. I did two all October, so slowed down a little bit on that. Having more success actually communicating through writing on that front. In answer to it, the big thing is that the longest portion is listening to the shows. And it's kind of like, you know, if you went home and, you know, you watched TV and then you did commentary on it. Well, that's, you know, that's the biggest part of it. You know, there's some editing and stuff. What really makes me able to do it is the support I get from sponsors, the support I get from listeners. It really does encourage us. We're doing more than just, you know, marking our time and playing around. It really is something that's adding value and that people enjoy. So as long as that continues the case, we hope to be able to continue to do the show and be able to continue to build towards bigger and better things. So thank you so much for the email. Much appreciated. All right, we're going to go. I've got one more couple comments on the show. I've had one more thing I wanted to share, but I'll save that for next week. Got a couple comments posted over on the show. Jennifer writes regarding the big show. Adam, I agree with you. This episode is touching and highlights the beauty of grace and forgiveness. I don't think that this episode condoned adultery, but instead I found myself cheering for the husband in this episode. Wow, what a man. I wish there were more courageous, family-centered archetypes of husbands and fathers in our media today, especially when faced with adversity. Thank you for sharing this lost episode. Well, thank you so much for that on the big show. Yeah, and kind of a contrast in that episode in the big family, which aired the next week. Nora writes regarding the big family. Nora writes, Adam, thanks for finding this episode. I've never seen the TV version, so it was really nice to hear a dragnet I hadn't heard before. One thing I wanted to mention about this and other episodes was the extremely elderly sound of the 52-year-old man's voice. Until he mentioned his age, I assumed he was at least in his 60s or possibly early 70s. I've noticed this on the show for other characters over 45. He also seemed to assume his life was over, that he was too old to change. Granted, he did die a few years later. As a 52-year-old myself, I wonder if people in their 50s were perceived as much older than they are now, since life expectancies were probably lower, or maybe because Jack Webb was only about 30. 50-year-olds did seem old to him. I think there are two parts. One is the acting, and I think there have been some worse 50 and older. There was Joe Friday's mother, which was played up kind of for laughs. And sometimes when you got younger actors, they can just plain overshoot. Part of it, I think there's a psychological aspect with him viewing his life as over. I think he viewed his life as not being able to correct his mistakes, not being able to fix things, and not wanting to sit around and watch. It's one of those things where if it was a situation where, say, he had a drinking problem, you know, that's something he could fix, something he could do about it. When the family's been messed up at that age, you know, it can feel really helpless. Now, and of course, this is Dragnet, so they're just being realistic to how this guy felt, not necessarily the way it was, and not necessarily the way that it had to be. You know, if this were another show like Dr. Kildare or Family Theater, there would have been a different ending. But it's Dragnet, and this is kind of how, you know, for the most part, how it played out in real life, unfortunately. And yeah, type of thing does happen, and people, they don't go to these extremes, but I've known people who have ended up feeling like that, regardless of the reality of their own lives. All right, well, that wraps it up. Thanks so much for everybody for listening. Got any comments, feel free to email me, box13@greatdetectives.net. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off. Special thanks to Johnny Tusa, who provides the theme music for the old-time Dragnet show. If you want to hear more of Johnny's music, please go to music.greatdetectives.net. That's music.greatdetectives.net.
Hey Dragnet Radio fans, this is Andrew Rhines. I'm the one that actually edits the podcast for the Old Time Radio Dragnet series. I was talking with Adam, and after editing these shows, I realized that there was no Daily Western Old Time Radio. So what did I do? I went ahead and created my own Daily Western Old Time Radio show. Check it out if you like the old westerns, Lone Ranger, Cisco Kid, Tales of a Texas Ranger, and many more. You can check us out by searching Old Time Radio Daily Westerns on iTunes or by going to our show notes site at eagle4life69.com/OTR. That's eagle, the number 4, life, and the number 69.com/OTR. I hope you enjoy, and I welcome you to listening to my podcast. Thanks. Have a good day.